Cause it's so beautiful.
The makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Purine and Pret Cooking Fat, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, Maple Margarine, and Niblet's Cheese Twists present The Epic Casebook. In which Inspector Carr investigates.
You've often heard me say, whilst interrogating a self-confessed murderer, that no one has the right to take the law into his or her hands. That I cannot stress strongly enough. And those who set themselves up as executioners outside the machinery of the law must be punished. Yet, a policeman knows better than most that there are times when the victim has goaded his assassin to a point where the crime might easily come under the heading of manslaughter and not be judged as a premeditated act of murder. However, that is for the court to decide, not your police officer. The victim in tonight's story was a stinker of the first order. As I delved into the background leading up to his death, the man became more and more repulsive in my eyes. Yet, he was murdered. And it was my job to find out why and how and, of course, who. Let me tell you about it. I've called my story, Till Death Do Us Part. As you no doubt gathered, I titled this week's story, Till Death Do Us Part, because marriage and murder were very much part of the crime's pattern. Carr?
Operations here, Inspector.
Yes, Hobbs.
Call's just come through.
No, don't tell me. In 20 minutes it'll be the witching hour and I'm off duty.
Pray so, sir. Man found battered to death. Dr. McPherson is on the scene, sir.
Well, senior police surgeon. 20 minutes to 12. I thought he'd be in bed by now. Went off duty early to attend a lecture at the Royal Institute.
Well, sir, he sends his compliments and says he's at 48 Wilberforce Crescent, South Kensington, sir.
Well, if Dr. Max says it's murder, then it's murder, all right. Okay, I'll just organise transport.
That's number 48, sir.
Ah. Oh. Lights are ablaze in the downstairs room. I see that Dr. McPherson's car's outside. Well, you can return to the yard, driver.
Oh, very good, sir.
Oh, quick work, guard.
Still wearing your black tie. Now, how did you...
I was cutting through Wilberforce Crescent when I saw this young woman running along the pavement, screaming at the top of her voice.
I can't go back. He'll murder me. I know he will.
He?
My husband. I must get a policeman. My baby's in there fast asleep. The man's mad. I tell you, he's mad. He even threatened to...
Is that your house where the front door's open?
Yes, but he's wild. I must get over the policeman.
Please, come back with me. No harm will come to you. I happen to be a police sergeant. No one seems to be following you. You're trembling. You need a sedative, young lady. Come on. You'd better take a couple as soon as we get back to your house. Well, Carl, we walked back here into this house through their living room, and I found a man she says was her husband who was lying on the floor. He was dead.
Murdered? Well, couldn't it have been...
I know what you're going to say. The wife could have struck him whilst they were quarreling. It may not necessarily have been murder if her own life was in danger, but wait till you get inside, you'll see what I mean.
I followed my friend and colleague into the house, through a narrow hallway shaped like the letter L. At the end of the right angle was a further door. It was open, and the framework revealed the body of a man, his head lying in a pool of blood. Nearby, a heavy brass poker.
Yeah, I thought it was rather strange. Not a sound as Mrs. Jeffries and I entered the room. Well, as soon as I saw this, the lack of noise ceased to be a mystery.
Is that the name, Jeffries?
Just take a look at the body.
Mm.
You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that blow has almost cracked the back of his skull in two.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't warding off an assault.
Besides, whoever killed him struck from behind.
Therefore premeditation, therefore murder.
Exactly, Carr. Yeah. Now, Mrs. Jeffries is under. I had to sedate her. As soon as she saw her husband lying there, she had the screaming hysterics. I had the greatest difficulty in giving her a jab with a needle.
I see. You say there's a child upstairs.
As soon as the injection began to take effect, I persuaded Mrs. Jeffries into her bedroom. Now, above are the servants' quarters. They are away. The wife is in hospital and her puppy's got the weekend off. Now, opposite the bedroom, there's a child's nursery. The kid can't be more than 2 or 3 years old. Poor little nipper, he's going to wake up to a sad and tragic world.
Just a minute, Mac. Judging by the amount of blood that flowed and the condition of the carpet and your own account as to what happened tonight, it means one of two things. Either Mrs. Jeffries clobbered her husband while his back was turned and then went running into the street shouting blue murder, hoping to get away with a charge of manslaughter or self-defense. Or, if what she told you is true, someone, in the couple of minutes between the time she ran out of the house and the time you arrived here, murdered him.
You mean there was a third party in the house tonight?
That's a possibility. That doesn't mean that Mrs. Jeffries was aware of his presence.
For that matter, the killer could have nipped into the house and been hiding in the garden. I wouldn't have seen him. Not with that tall, privet hedge. I tell you this, he's not been dead more than 10 minutes. Oh, dear. She's very deeply sedated, but a mother's instinct, you know. If Mrs. Jeffries wakes now, you'll not be able to get any coherent statement from her.
Okay, Mac, you go out and see if you can pacify the child. I'll take a look around. That poker might reveal something interesting. Brass is an ideal metal for showing up prints.
All right, I'll be down in a moment.
Right. Oh, is this the telephone you used to get through to the yard?
Ah, it is.
Right.
Operations.
Carr here. I'm speaking from the address you gave me. Dr. McPherson's here. The name is Jeffries. Just a minute, Ops. I'll see if I can get his Christian name. Here's an envelope. It's Martin Jeffries.
Martin.
Check, Ops. You've got the address. Sir. I want to find out all about him. Judging by the residential area and the way the house is furnished, he's obviously a man of means.
Very good, sir.
And I want a print man over here right away. I haven't looked at the murder weapon yet. It's a large, heavy brass poker. Prints may come up under my microscope.
Will do, sir.
Tell the night duty officer at X Branch I can't wait till morning. Time is of the essence. I want to know everything about his wife.
Right, sir. Will he be back at the yard tonight, sir?
I can't tell yet. I should be off duty by now. Oh, send a docket through to ACO's office. They like to know what's happening.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and one other thing, Ops, the body. The quicker we can get the corpse out of the house, the better. Send an ambulance right away. Won't take more than a few minutes for me to make an appreciation of the situation, as my military friends would say.
Will do, sir.
Right, bye.
That money must be worth a few thousand.
Hmm? Ah, I'm afraid I wasn't paying much attention to it. It's all so bizarre. If she murdered him, why does she go running into the street? Why not undress and go to bed and pretend the first inkling she has of the tragedy was when she came down to breakfast?
On the other hand, if she didn't kill him, is she shielding a lover? Maybe a husband arrives home, finds his wife in another man's arms. They quarrel. A lover picks up the poker.
Just a minute, Mac.
Hmm?
In the first place, Mr. Jeffries is minus his shoes, his coat and his tie. Oh, there are the shoes, neatly tucked away under that sofa. I saw a jacket thrown across the chair in the hallway. Did Madam look as though she'd just arrived home? Could she have surprised hubby in the arms of his mistress?
Now, that's an angle I never thought of. No, as you'll see, she's wearing a skirt and a blouse. The upper middle class who can afford this kind of living room don't go out at night in that sort of attire.
Did she say what they were quarrelling over?
No, she seemed far too frightened and hysterical.
Well, the child seems at peace with the world. A boy or a girl?
It's a boy. He's a sweet little chap. Mm. I just touched his shoulder and he was sleeping as peaceful as children can sleep. Hey, well, where do we go from here, Carr?
Well, I know where you're going. Get some shut-eye. I've cased this room, but not very thoroughly. Haven't gone through his private papers.
Yeah, just a minute. There's another thought. We're being conditioned by the husband and wife's quarrel. Supposing it was a perfect stranger. Supposing as soon as Mrs. Jeffries ran into the street crying blue murder, it was some man intent on robbery and cracks the skull of Jeffries, but is interrupted by the return of the wife and me.
You mean ran out the back way?
Why not? We haven't really tested the tradesman's entrance or any of the rear windows, for that matter.
True, Mac, true. But somehow tenuous. I'll tell you one thing, though.
And what's that?
Either husband or wife or both are interested in the theatre. There are all those copies of The Theatrical World. You see, the bookshelves are filled with works by James Agate, Shaw. There's a learned volume on that German playwright Brecht. I wonder if she used to be or is an actress. Her frenzied hysterics would then deceive even you, my dear Mac.
No. I've never been an actress. And I told you the truth, Doctor.
Now, you should still be asleep.
You did say you were a doctor. You shouldn't have made me sleep. Oh, no, I can't bear to look at him. I hated Martin. He hated me, but I wouldn't wish this on him.
Come into another room, Mrs. Jeffries. My friend is Chief Inspector Carr of New Scotland Yard.
Do you feel up to making a statement, Mrs. Jeffries? You realize your husband's been murdered, don't you?
Yes. Oh, I don't know. It's all a nightmare.
Mrs. Jeffries, in this sort of situation, we have to be heartless in order that justice is done as speedily as possible. Now, I take it there are no servants on the premises, hmm? Well, isn't there somewhere where your small son can spend the remainder of the night? It's barely 1 o'clock. Very soon, heavy-footed policemen will be tramping all over the place. Are your parents living in London?
My mother's dead. My father lives in Wilberforce Street, just around the corner.
Do you mind if I phone him?
No. Yes, I do mind. My father will be fast asleep.
Well, what about your... Stephen, isn't
he?
Mummy! Oh, dear.
Mummy!
Look, perhaps, Mrs. Jeffries, you'd better...
Yes, darling. Mummy's here. All right, gentlemen. All right. But please let me go and talk to my son.
What do you mean by all right, Mrs. Jeffries?
I confess. I murdered my husband. I killed him with the poker.
The distraught young woman ran out of the room. Dr. McPherson and I could hear her weeping bitterly as she leapt up the stairs to minister to her small son. It just didn't make sense, particularly as the magnifying glass revealed smudges where fingerprints should be, signs that someone had taken care to remove any telltale clues.
You're not going to take that confession seriously, are you, Carr?
If she persists in it, yes, I must. We'll just come and take a look at the back of the house while we're waiting for the ambulance and the printman.
Ah, yeah, that's a good idea. There's a door just at the back of the stairs. Yeah, that looks as though it leads into the kitchen.
Yes. Well, let's have some light on the subject. There's the back door.
Mm-hmm. It's locked, all right.
Oh.
Now, this is a tradesman's entrance leads into the alley that divides these houses from the back of Palmerston Crescent.
Oh, when you went upstairs, Mac, did you notice any windows open?
No, I looked specially. They're all closed, including the servants' rooms.
What about the bathroom? I'm thinking of the drainpipe outside.
Securely bolted.
Oh, well, then there's nothing for it. Somebody entered the house through the front door. But who? Oh. Well, I'm going to take that. Yes, hello.
Is that Sloane 5843?
Speaking.
Is Mrs. Jeffrey there, please?
I'll call her. Who is that?
This is her father speaking.
Oh, just a moment.
Was that the telephone?
Yes, yes, your father's on the phone.
My father? Hello, Dad. Oh, Daddy, something terrible's happened.
Oh.
Martin's dead. I killed him, Daddy.
Oh.
Do you understand? I killed him.
What on earth are you saying? I'll be right over.
No fingerprints on this poker, sir.
Well, careful.
Those minute hairs and the dried blood will be needed for forensic evidence, so there's no doubt they came from the man's body. Well, I don't think there's anything more I can do. See you tomorrow, Carr. You're going to stay here long?
Sounds as though the man I'm waiting for has arrived. That's the girl's father. Hmm.
Mr. Askell is here, sir.
Oh, good.
Where's my daughter? Was that Martin?
Well, they'll be taking him away in the ambulance. Yes, I'm Chief Inspector Carr, New Scotland Yard. This is our senior police surgeon, Dr. McPherson.
My name is Haskell, George Haskell. He was my son-in-law. What happened?
Speaking medically, your son-in-law died from brain hemorrhage caused by a violent blow to the cranium.
Mr. Haskell, your daughter has confessed to the crime.
My poor, poor child. She's trying to shield me. I killed him.
I see. George Haskell, I arrest you for the murder of your son-in-law. I must warn you that anything you now say will be taken down and used in evidence against you. You understand that?
I understand. Do you want me to go with you now?
Would you like to tell me what happened?
Well, you know what happened. I killed him with a poker.
You killed him with a poker? Why?
Well, because he was slowly driving my daughter mad. That I was cruel. A sadistic beast. Every time my daughter threatened to leave him, he'd laugh and say, "Go, go by all means, but little Stephen stays with me." Every time I threatened to cut off that allowance, he'd sneer and say it was all right by him if I wanted to see my daughter and my grandson starve.
What did your son-in-law do?
Do? Oh, for a living, you mean? Martin Jeffries was a reasonably good actor until he persuaded my daughter that he would love and cherish her when she became his wife. From that day on, he's done nothing but gamble and torture my daughter with stories of his sexual exploits, but never in front of a witness so that she could get a divorce. Oh, no, always when they were alone. And that's when he started to strike her. Once he even thrashed my grandson. Oh, we might barely 3 years old.
And that's why you killed him?
Yes, sir, that's why I killed him. May we not go now before my...
Daddy! Oh. Daddy!
There, my child, please. It's all right. I told the inspector everything. Now, why don't you and Stephen go to your aunt, please? All right, Inspector, I'm ready when you are.
Oh, no. No, he didn't do it. I did it.
Please, Mrs. Jeffries, for your baby's sake.
Mommy!
Oh, look.
Mommy!
Mrs. Jeffries, you'd better go back to him.
Yes. Yes, I'm going.
Mr. Haskell, at what time did you strike your son-in-law this evening?
Oh, not more than an hour and a half, 2 hours ago.
That's about right. What were you doing here?
I came to see my daughter. She was out. She was running up the street. Mm-hmm. I ran in and said, "What have you done to my daughter?" I picked up the poker and, as his laughing, staring face stared at mine, I struck him. Do you hear? I struck him.
On his face? Where?
I don't know. On the temple, I suppose. We were shouting at each other.
I see. You're sure you struck him on the temple?
Why, yes. Why? Where was he struck?
Well, don't you know, Mr. Haskell?
Let me through, you fool. Yes. Yeah, he didn't do it. Father, what on earth do you think you're doing?
Go back home. Peter, you have to keep out of this.
The sergeant at the door says that my father's confessed to murdering Martin.
The sergeant's a stupid god. He talks too much.
Please. Please go. Don't interfere. There's nothing that you can do. In a moment of misguided love for her father, your sister has confessed to a murder which I committed.
Gale confessed? Inspector Carr, this is like something, like some awful black comedy. I did it. My father's covering up for my sister, and my sister is covering up for me.
How did you kill him?
I hit him with a blood-stained poker.
That's a very interesting answer psychologically, Mr. Peter Haskell.
What do you mean?
Well, you couldn't have killed your brother-in-law with a blood-stained poker. The act of murder caused the blood-stains. Is it because someone told you that the murder weapon is now all blood-stained?
I tell you, I murdered Martin. Isn't that enough?
According to the law, a confession cannot be used as evidence unless it's made in front of a magistrate, which means I have to pull the confessor in and bring him before the beak in the morning. Now, I'm going to look silly if I present the three of you. Now, who's covering up for who? Oh, before anybody speaks, I must tell you, Mr. George Haskell, that I'm convinced you know something about the murder, but
he doesn't. He...
Look, he rings this house at this time of night, expresses no surprise at a strange voice answering the phone, and calmly inquires whether Mrs. Jeffries is here. Why did you phone, Mr. Haskell? Was it because your son had just returned home to confess that he'd killed his brother-in-law?
I don't have to answer anything until I've seen my solicitor. I've confessed. Take me away.
Your father didn't even know the nature of the wound that killed Mr. Jeffries, but you did.
Of course I did. I've confessed. Isn't that enough?
When did you strike the man with the poker, Mr. Haskell? At what time was it?
I heard my sister shouting, "Help! Help!" I ran out of the front door, leapt over the hedge which divides our two gardens, ran to this house and clobbered him. And I'm not going to pretend I'm sorry. What do you want to do? Put handcuffs on me? Well, what's the form?
We were wearing gloves at the time. Did you wait to put gloves on?
That's not a very funny question, Inspector.
I'm not in the habit of being funny when a man's killed while his back's turned. Why don't you all tell me the truth?
I'll tell you the truth, Inspector.
Don't, my child, please. Just think of my grandson.
Well, why did you believe me, sir? Yes, I was wearing gloves. It's a freezing cold night, and you've been wearing gloves, and so is this doctor. I take it they're your gloves on the hall stand.
You have an observant eye, Mr. Haskell. Of course. Peter Haskell.
Are you the man that wrote that bestseller, Out of the Shadows? A most ingenious murder plot.
Shall we go? I take it you want to book me in at the police station. That is the jargon, isn't it, Inspector? To be booked in when one is arrested.
I'm going to ask the three of you to stay in this room. I want you to discuss this matter amongst yourselves, and I want you to bear in mind that making a false confession is a serious offence. Now, Dr. McPherson and I are going back to where the unfortunate man is lying. Any moment from now, the ambulance will take his body away. I know that you're withholding information. Now, talk about it amongst yourselves. I'll be back in 5 minutes. Let's go. The two of us left the trio and made our way back to the scene of the crime. The fact that Peter Haskell was the well-known crime writer was an important factor in my deliberations. As I said to Dr. McPherson, doesn't add up, does it, Mac? This Peter Haskell wouldn't kill so brutally and clumsily.
Well, I don't agree, Carr. None of them is type to commit brutal murder, but the fact that this man was maltreating Haskell's sister could cause him to lose all self-control.
All right, see, Reed hit him with his fists. But the physical act of going to that fireplace over there, reaching for the poker, doesn't suggest a sudden loss of control. It's a clear, deliberate desire to kill. Now, let's take another look at that poker. Now, look at this, Mac. Now, these are old fingerprints which have been smudged. No one had time to wipe this poker clean. They must have heard you and Mrs. Jeffries returning.
Of course! Who else?
I'm going back into the living room. Well, anybody got anything to tell me?
We haven't had 5 minutes. And it's all right. We don't need it. I'm now convinced that my sister didn't kill Martin. My father's been covering up for me, as you gathered. We knew that he'd been murdered.
By we? You mean the three of you?
No, no, no. I told you the truth when I said that I leapt over the hedge and entered this house. I heard them quarreling. I worried for my sister's safety. I heard her rushing out into the road. I ran into Martin's study. He was lying on the floor with his head split open. I thought my sister did it. I went back home, and when my father questioned
me... Peter told me that he killed Martin.
We both...
Well, never mind that now. What's the name of your servant?
He's away.
Please, Mrs. Jeffries, he may be innocent, but I want him picked up tonight, or rather, I should say, this morning.
Well, you can't think that Palmer is...
Madam, either one of you is guilty, or it's a servant. There can be no other possibility. Well, I'm keeping a sergeant here tonight. I'm going to get some shut-eye. Come.
Operations here, Inspector. It works, sir. As soon as the Yarmouth police told Palmer that if he didn't come clean, Mrs. Jeffries would be arrested for murder, he broke down and confessed, sir. Seems he stayed too long in the pub and missed his train.
So he returned home, using the back door as he normally did, heard his mistress shouting help, rushed into the study and clobbered his boss. That the story?
Yes, sir. He ran out of the back door, locked it. Swears he would have confessed eventually, but...
Probably telling the truth. Running back to his own hometown was a natural thing to do. Okay, Ops. My thanks to Yarmouth. Tell them we're sending an escort to bring Palmer back to London.
Very good, sir.
Well, Mac, did you hear that?
Aye, poor chap. He won't be able to get away with a plea of self-defense. He might have done if he hadn't struck Jeffries on the back of the head.
True, but what with the evidence of the Haskell family, they won't be able to pin a murder rap on him. I hope he doesn't get too stiff a sentence.
Now,
what is it, Mac?
Well, it's pretty clear that the Haskells didn't kill Jeffries the way they told their stories, but... Why did you look to Palmer as being the killer?
Because it had to be Palmer, don't you see?
Because he was the only one, other than his employers, who had a key to the back door.
A contributory factor, but not only that. There was the all-important matter of... You know that in their agitation, the wife and her relatives rushed out into the cold night without wearing gloves. And yet, when we examined the poker... Now look at this, Mac. And these are old fingerprints which have been smudged. By someone wearing gloves, of course. And that someone had to be the servant, Palmer. He was found guilty of manslaughter under extenuating circumstances and given the minimum sentence allowed under the law.
The Epic Casebook was produced by Michael Silver for the makers of Epic Pure Sunflower Oil, Maypole Margarine, Yum Yum Peanut Butter, and Niblet's Cheese Twists, with Hugh Russ as Inspector Carr. Listen again next Thursday night at 9:30 to another exciting story from our Epic Casebook.